The story of the most savage serial killer in Russian history has a lot to tell us about life inside a changing Russia. My guest, Robert Cullen, has been reporting on what used to be the Soviet Union since the early 80s for such publications as Newsweek, The Atlantic, and The New Yorker. His new book, The Killer Department, is about the 8-year hunt and the 1992 trial of Andrei Chikatilo. Chikatilo was convicted of 52 murders, which he committed over a 12-year span. His victims were girls, boys, and young women. His crimes were brutal and sexual. He often masturbated while stabbing his victims to death. He sexually mutilated many of the bodies. I asked Cullen about the killer's M.O.
He apparently spent a great deal of time traveling, mostly on very slow trains in Rostov, for the purpose of going from one factory to another and trying to secure supplies for the factory that he worked in. He had been a teacher, and he had apparently a fairly smooth line that he was able to use with children and teenagers. And he was very adept at picking out from crowds that he saw in train stations or in buses or on trains the kinds of people that were most likely to succumb to his ploy. It's not hard, having read about his work or his methods, to sit in a train station and start to pick out the kinds of people. Some of them were homeless women, young but alcoholic, people who had been abused in their childhood. Some of them were retarded themselves. Some of them were just station prostitutes. There's an underclass within the transient population of the Soviet Union, and he was very adept at picking out the ones who would succumb to what he had in mind for them. When he succeeded in engaging one of them in conversation, he never used force in an effort to get them off into an isolated spot where he could kill them. He always used a story. For example, he might say that he had a dacha just through this next wooded area, and he had some VCR, he had a VCR and some interesting tapes and some food and drink, and people would willingly follow him. And once he got them into an isolated area where no one could hear, he would pull out his knife and usually stun them or hit them over the head and disable them. Once he had done that, he would strip them and then start his ritual, which is rather ghastly and resulted in the excising of the sexual organs of his victims, multiple stab wounds, and so on.
Americans have become fairly obsessed with serial killers for some reason. I mean, serial killers have become a really popular subject of made-for-TV movies and books and articles, and of course there's plenty of them in real life in America. But what about in the Soviet Union? I mean, it seems that this story, the story of this serial killer, was something unlike anything that ever happened there before.
Well, to the degree that there have been serial killers in Soviet history prior to Andrei Chikatilo, the information about them was kept carefully guarded by those police officials who had to know about it. The public never was made aware of the possibility that such people could be moving about in their midst. And in fact, that contributed to the ease with which Chikatilo was able to lure his victims away from train stations and bus stops and other places where he met them. People in Russia were accustomed to teaching their children to be friendly and to refer to strangers on the street as uncle or auntie. So it was not the kind of culture that has developed in the United States, where parents teach their children to be very wary of strangers and never to go off with strangers. And that, I think, contributed to the creation of an environment in which Chikatilo was able to operate.
Did the suppression of the press include suppression of the press writing about crimes?
Yes. The press, of course, wrote only about crime, that which the police and the Communist Party wanted it to write. In the case of a crime like murder, the official ideology was that murder and other crimes of that type were a vestige of capitalist days that would gradually be eliminated as the society moved toward a perfect socialism. So crimes like murder were never featured in the newspapers unless they happened to be the result of an effort by somebody to rob or show greed of some kind, to set up some kind of a capitalist scheme, in other words. The upshot was that, in fact, as rumors and other kinds of word-of-mouth information about the crimes began to circulate in Rostov, The police actually lied to the public about what was going on and said that there was no evidence to suggest anything like a serial killer, when in fact they had evidence to indicate that the same individual had killed, at that point, 27 people. Toward the latter portion of this period, when Glasnost had taken hold in the media, the people did get more information, and there was quite a panic in Rostov in the latter part of 1989 and in 1990 before the man was caught.
Why did the police lie about it?
Well, the police had a utilitarian attitude toward news, and that was that they thought that the only useful news was that which might inspire some potential witnesses to come forward. So in a given village, they might allow the local newspaper to publish the fact that so-and-so disappeared, and anybody who saw her prior to Saturday, June 14th, should contact the militia.
This particular serial killer, his crimes included sex crimes, the rape and sexual mutilation of his victims. How did the press, well, I guess the press didn't really address that aspect of it very much at all.
No, and in fact, it's not quite correct to say that he was a rapist, because one of the fundamental features of his personality was that he was sexually dysfunctional. And while he suggested in some of his confessions that he wanted to rape, he was unable to do so and therefore got his sexual release by stabbing.
My guest is Robert Cullen, author of the new book, The Killer Department. We'll be back after this short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Robert Cullen. Since the early 80s, has been reporting on what used to be the Soviet Union. His new book is about the case of a Russian serial killer. It sounds like repressive attitudes about sex in the Soviet Union led to problems in the investigation because they were looking for the wrong things because of their sexual misunderstandings.
There were an enormous number of prejudices that came into play in the course of the investigation. Chikatilo was a man who took both women and young boys among his victims. And when boys began to show up among the victims, the police immediately assumed that the killer must be gay, even though they had testimony or consultations with psychiatrists who said that that was not likely to be the case. They went ahead and terrorized the gay population of Rostov, which was deeply closeted to begin with, given the puritanical streak in Soviet society, and wound up sending more than 100 gay suspects to jail for sodomy when it turned out they weren't involved in any way in the murder. Three gay men hung themselves because of the pressure of the investigation. They also turned up an enormous number of false suspects among the inmates and former inmates of a home for the retarded in the area where the crimes were committed, in part because they didn't really differentiate between mental disease and retardation, and they assumed the killer had a mental disease, therefore it was quite likely that a retarded suspect might be the person they were looking for.
The police and the forensics unit in the Soviet Union really weren't very good at picking up on the right clues. What were some of the mistakes they made?
Well, one of the principal mistakes they made was due to the backward nature of Soviet technology. They misanalyzed the semen samples that were left by the suspect and came to the conclusion that the suspect must have type AB blood. And for years, they filtered their suspects through that filter. They kept up with the ones who had type AB blood and discarded the ones who didn't. Chikatilo, it turned out, had type A blood and was arrested at one time and let go because his blood type didn't match what they were looking for. But the most interesting thing, I think, is that contrary to what you would expect, the broad powers that the Soviet police had really didn't contribute to their ability to solve this case. In fact, they hindered it.
How do they hinder it?
Well, I went into this not being a specialist in crime, having, I suspect, the typical American's view that if we were to diminish the civil rights of suspects and expand the powers of police, it might not be a good idea, but at least it would make the police more efficient and mm-hmm. would lead to the solution of more crimes. But in fact, the Russian police had a lot of the powers that some of the conservatives in this country would like to see our police given. They could detain suspects without bail. They could question suspects without having to read them a Miranda warning and give them the right to counsel. But what that resulted in was lazy police work, where the police tended to try to round up likely suspects and interrogate them, sometimes rather viciously, until one of them confessed. Instead of doing the kind of nasty, difficult footwork that would have been required to solve the case, they pounded false confessions out of at least five people before this case was finally solved. At the same time, there were instances along the way that could have led to the solution of the case had they been followed up properly.
Chikatilo was in a cage during the trial. How typical is that in Russia?
In serious murder cases, they use the cage. The cage was not built for Chikatilo. There is one courtroom within the courthouse in Rostov that has this cage. And it is something that I think affects people's perceptions of the killer. I think it made me feel a little bit more compassionate toward him than I would otherwise have felt, because it's hard to not be sympathetic to someone who's herded into a cage and more or less put on display every day.
You say that the confession plays a very important place in Stalinist and post-Stalinist Soviet life. Do you think there's any connection between the forced confessions, well, the coerced confessions in this trial and the kind of show confessions during the Stalinist era?
Yes, I think it comes from Russian culture that predates the Soviet period by hundreds of years. There is a sense in the Russian people that a person who is guilty of a crime will be compelled to confess by his own character. The opposite sense, I think, is true in the United States. I think in the United States we have the sense that a guilty person will deny his crimes up until the very last minute, and that it's up to the police to prove, despite his denials, that he was guilty. In Russia, I think the sense is, and you can see this perhaps in a novel like Crime and Punishment, where Dostoevsky goes to great detail to show the psychological pressure that builds up and forces Raskolnikov to confess. In Russia, the sense is that a guilty man will confess. That's why I think Stalin had to have confessions in his show trials, because if there were not confessions, the people wouldn't have believed that the individuals who were persecuted had committed any crimes. Even now in Russia, during the trial of Chikatilo, there were people who were operating and reading the papers and talking to me about the trial and the case who thought that if a man did not confess at his trial, he couldn't be convicted. So the Russians have a different view of confession than our culture does.
You started writing about the Soviet Union back in the early 80s. Did it give you a different perspective on that part of the world to write about it from the perspective of crime?
Well, it certainly did, because when I was in Moscow in my original stint as a correspondent there in the Brezhnev years and the early Gorbachev period, a lot of the areas that were deeply involved in the Chikatilo case were absolutely off limits to foreign correspondents. For example, the fact that there were homosexuals in Russian society was something that could only be guessed. It certainly couldn't be demonstrated, because the people who lived that lifestyle were so deeply secretive about it that there was no way to ever find out who they were and write about what their problems were. The whole question of the homeless, the mentally retarded, and so on, those were areas that were completely off limits to foreign correspondents. Going in there last year and doing the research on this book, I found that the most interesting aspects for me were the opportunities to get into areas like that that had previously been off limits to the West.
Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Robert Cullen is the author of The Killer Department. This is Fresh Air.